What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Luke Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. Thanks for checking us out. I know that you have a million D options out there, so the fact that you found this show and choose to invest your time and listen to it, I really do appreciate. I think we're going to tackle some interesting topics today, including the death of American exceptionalism. But listen, first, if you want to connect with the show, you can do so through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. It's named after my first book that I wrote. And you can reach out to me there via email. And if you like this show and you want to get the word out, please share it. It takes like 2 seconds to do it, and I really do appreciate it. It makes a gigantic difference. You can also rate the show, give it 5 stars on Apple, and write a little description. The algorithms love that, and we're fighting an information war here, people, and we got to get the word out. So I appreciate it. But let's talk about the death of American exceptionalism. There was a time when America was thought to be exceptional, but you know, sadly, those days are long gone, and I take no pleasure saying this as an American. I'm just trying to be as objective and honest about the situation as I can. Too many wars have been waged under false pretenses. Too many lies have been told by those people in high government offices. Too many black men have been shot in the back while running away from the police. Too many tax dollars have been spent to build bombs that are dropped on innocent civilians. You know, like most fairy tales, the story of America is pure fantasy and requires the reader to, you know, suspend their disbelief in order to just go with it. If you remember, you know, like 100 years ago when Disney released the movie Fantasia, it told the story of the sorcerer's apprentice, played by Mickey Mouse. He borrows his master's wizard hat and used his book of spells to help him complete his chores faster. But his lack of experience came back to haunt him as this army of brooms and mops and buckets and everything spiraled, you know, out of control and almost destroyed the castle that he was in. Now, the point of the story is not meant to be a documentary on magic or a study about brooms or a, you know, History Channel look at mice and how they behave. It's none of that. The story is about what can happen when a person unlocks power that they can't control. And it is an allegory that is meant to be studied to find the hidden meaning, like a lot of the Disney movies are. Now, the story of American exceptionalism is an allegory as well. It's like an idea or a concept, but it's not a real thing. It's utopian society that Americans strive to live in and be a part of, but it's only, you know, it's only as real as a cartoon army of marching brooms and buckets. So it wasn't one specific event or issue that destroyed this illusion, but rather a lifetime of lies that have been told about America and to Americans. And I think most people would agree that the United States has always been portrayed as the good guy, and the citizens, you know, of this great land are the type of people that look out for other countries that cannot look out for themselves. They're the defender of freedom, and they believe that everyone is entitled to truth, justice, and the American way. America never wants war, but they always end up getting dragged into them in order to protect the innocent. But, you know, look, all of this is total bullshit, of course. None of it is true. Nowhere has the hypocrisy of American exceptionalism been more obvious than in the wars that it wages around the world against evil regimes and dangerous extremism and terrorists. But it went, you know, it didn't start with 9/11 and the bullshit wars in the Middle East. America's been involved in at least one war for 96% of its existence. So the country is hardly getting dragged into these conflicts against their will. I mean, what they do is they wage wars against innocent people, then base their reason for doing so on blatant lies in order to justify their illegal actions. That's how they do it. Every war the United States has been involved with is always sold to the public through lies. Every single one of them. The United States public, well, the world for that matter, was told that the Japanese surprised the American naval forces at Pearl Harbor and caught the Navy totally off guard. Now, that is not true. In fact, Roosevelt was aware of the impending attack and had the aircraft carriers move behind the island instead of being sitting ducks in Honolulu, in Pearl Harbor. The boats that were destroyed were older and less valuable to the fleet. But Roosevelt knew that an attack would give him the justification he was looking for in order to jump into the war in the Pacific, which it did. And, you know, the American people were whipped into like a frenzy to get involved in Europe to battle the Nazis. And the nation entered the war to defend its allies, like Britain and France. But the truth is that those countries had been begging America to enter the war for years with no success. And America only entered for the last year of that 6-year war, after the continent was softened up and the war was almost over. The history books, you know, also failed to mention to the public that a condition for entering the war was that Britain had to give America all of their blueprints for their airplanes, tanks, trucks, bomb technology, and even their code-breaking techniques before the United States would agree to come to their defense. But that's never mentioned as a reason for entry into the battle, because that doesn't fit with the narrative of American exceptionalism. America is supposed to come to the aid of its allies because it's the right thing to do, not because they got paid off, or bribed, or bought. Did America enter the Vietnam War to protect the South Vietnamese from being overrun by the communists? No. They entered the war after being attacked in the Gulf of Tonkin, except it turned out that through declassified documents that there never was an attack on an American ship. It was a completely made up event. It never happened. Yet it was used as the justification to stick the American nose into someone else's business under false pretenses. And from that point on, America was involved in a war that resulted in the death of over 50,000 American troops and 2 million dead Vietnamese and Laotian men, women, and children. Over a fucking lie about a boat being attacked, which didn't happen. But we got to stop the dominoes from falling, right? That's what we were told. well, that if, you know, communism, it spreads, and if it gets in Southeast Asia, then, you know, what's next? The first Gulf War was fought after Iraq rolled into Kuwait and took babies out of the incubator to let them die on the cold hospital floor, except that it was discovered that, you know, Naraya, the 15-year-old girl that was the witness to the event, turned out to be the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to the United States. Oh, and she was coached by Hill and Knowlton to lie to that Congressional Human Rights Caucus as the, I don't know, justification for America to go to war, you know, to paint Saddam as this maniac who was out of control and taking babies out of the incubator. And it was a lie. It was just another lie to justify another war. You look at the numbers before that, there was no support for this war. George H.W. Bush was in office and he had nothing, you know, he had no support. But then when the Naraya video came out of her testifying, almost overnight, the numbers on that war reversed themselves. And it was only a matter of time, but boom, we were there. And I remember watching that. I was a freshman in college when that first Gulf War started. And it was fascinating. I'm not going to lie to you. That was the first, you know, big war of my lifetime, was that first Gulf War. And it was made for TV. Remember CNN and Wolf Blitzer and Bernard Shaw and you know, and those Charles Jacko, Charles Jackass, with his helmet and the sirens going on, and the, you know, they look like they were broadcasting from a soundstage in Atlanta on CNN. And, you know, one guy's got the gas mask. If you watch the introduction to this show, the Macroaggressions, the video version of it, if you watch my intro, I ended it with the video of those two guys, you know, the siren going off, one guy's grabbing his helmet, the other guy's grabbing his gas mask, but he doesn't have, I mean, it was like, you know, Benny Hill watching that. So, but I remember watching that war and being like, fucking A, man, let's go get those guys. They are killing babies and they're trying to invade Kuwait and everything. And yeah, we got to get them. You know, I didn't know any better. I'm not proud of it, but I didn't know any better. And, you know, and I was at that age where you go into the military. I was like 18 years old. I just turned 18. And you've got to remember that set a lot of people got angry about that, and some of them joined the military, and then they've wound up in, you know, not too long in the Middle East. Not in the way that it really did a number on people after 9/11. That was some grade A propaganda that got people to join the military because they were really pissed off. But still, even in the first Gulf War, there was a component of that that made people want to just, like, you know, sign up and go get those bastards and things like that. But it's just another lie. But there would be far more lies coming to justify future wars in the region besides babies in the incubator. You know, like, when the blame for 9/11 was pinned on Afghanistan, even though the hijackers were allegedly Saudis, you know, stuff like that. I mean, the story of 9/11 that was told to the American people was a lie from beginning to end. Who did it, what happened, and why it happened. One big fat lie told to the world to justify the desire of those in the Bush administration and members of the Project for a New American Century for imperial conquest. That's what the lie was about. That's what 9/11 was about. It was about the justification to push American forces into the Middle East. Gotta have a boogeyman. Well, segments of the public, but certainly not the general public, learned of the list of seven countries that were slated for regime change over the next 5 years when General Wesley Clark, who was the supreme Allied Commander of Europe, for NATO. I think he had that position from 97 through 2000. And he exposed the existence of this letter that was sitting on the Secretary of Defense desk during the interview he did with Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! He explained that the belief was that the United States had a good military that could take down governments. So he went on to fill, you know, paint the picture and describe how the United States had plans to take out seven countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran. So much for not wanting war, huh? That's some American exceptionalism you got there. Be ashamed if something bad happened to it. The public watched as the Bush administration, in conjunction with their accomplices in the media, laid this, what can best be described as a flimsy foundation that would be used to justify the invasion of Iraq again. America pretended to have their arm twisted to get involved in yet another hornet's nest in the Middle East in order to save the lives of helpless Iraqis from their murderous dictator, you know, helping them by dropping bombs on them, as you do, right? We've got to save these people from their murderous dictator. Bombs away! So, what did the media do when concerned citizens spoke out against these illegal wars of aggression? Did they give those people a platform to express their concern? Did they push for Congress to actually authorize war as they are required to do? Did the media hold the administration to provide proof of their claims of weapons of mass destruction? No, of course, the media did none of that. What they did was they got their torches and pitchforks and encouraged the American people to destroy anyone speaking out against the war. Like Bill Maher, like the Dixie Chicks, and like Phil Donahue. American exceptionalism. What's exceptional about any of this stuff? Seriously. Now, it has been said by some that now we are living in a post-fact world. But really, it's been this way for a very long time. The only difference between now and then is that these days, people are starting to figure out the lies that they are being fed by the governments of the world, the media, and by those in positions of power. It's always been a post-fact world. It's just that no one ever noticed it. Great quote from George Orwell in his book 1984. "And if all others accepted the lie which the party imposed, if all records told the same tale, then the lie passed into history and became truth. Who controls the past," ran the party slogan, "controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." The lie that the party has imposed is that they are exceptional. And so by association, that makes their fellow citizens exceptional as well. You know, it might be easy to criticize the government and remove the belief that they are exceptional, but by doing so, the people must also remove their own label as well. And that's something that, you know, most people want to admit it, but if they don't get honest with their own complicity in this crime, they've got to acknowledge their role in perpetuating this myth of greatness. America hasn't been great in a very long time. I hate saying that. We've been selling the vision of greatness, but great people and great nations don't do the sorts of things that America does around the world. They don't threaten other countries. They don't extend debt, you know, extend loans to them and then call in the loans and enslave the countries like the United States does through its lackeys at the World Bank and IMF. They don't, you know, start wars over bananas like the United States did. they don't get involved in wars for sugar, which the United States has done, or oil. They don't go into countries like Afghanistan, which, you know, they were living in the Bronze Age on September 10th, 2001. And then we bombed them back to the Stone Age, which, you know, theoretically should have taken a weekend to do. But here we are 19 years later and still in Afghanistan. What are we doing there? I'll tell you what we're doing there. We're looting the place. That's what we're doing there. The United States government and their partners in the corporate media work very hard to keep the people thinking that everything is fine, that nothing's changed, that they're still free, and that they still live in a country built on doing the right thing, even when it's difficult, that their country is the policeman of the world because nobody cares more about the vulnerable than America, and that the people of the world aspire to be just like them. This is nonsense. It's complete and utter nonsense. It just isn't the case anymore. And we have to be able to acknowledge this. You know, we have to get honest with what's happening. Several decades ago, when a president spoke to the nation during the State of the Union address, every television channel would be showing the event. People would stop what they were doing and listen to the president address the people, to, you know, to hear his words, to read his body language, and, you know, to feel a bit inspired. But something's changed, and it is tough to pinpoint exactly when it happened, but people no longer stop their lives to listen to their commander-in-chief address them. At least Americans don't. Maybe it was all the ridiculous standing ovations and the obvious ass-kissing that turned people off, you know? Maybe that. Everyone's standing up and clapping and applauding like trained seals, looking preposterous doing that. Oh, we've got to clap. Oh, we've got to be strong against these terrorists. Oh, standing ovation. Everybody gets up and claps. Perhaps it was all the years of hypocrisy, where the president lectured foreign leaders about their reckless behavior while simultaneously participating in the exact behavior that he was critical of. You know, that whole do as I say, not as I do philosophy, it's a bit tired and ineffective. When the American people have witnessed one president after another engage in questionable decision-making and, frankly, outright criminal activity. They have become the last people in a position to lecture anyone else about bad behavior. In 2016, President Obama had the audacity to criticize Vladimir Putin because he invades smaller countries, jails political opponents, controls his country's media, and has driven Russia's economy into a recession. Of course, nobody would suggest that these are positive traits or in any way try to, you know, like minimize a person's culpability if they engage in these activities. But, you know, a little bit of self-awareness is necessary before calling someone else out for this, especially if one happens to be guilty of the exact same behavior, like Obama. During Obama's 8 years in office, he bombed Afghanistan and Iraq, just like the previous president, and then added Somalia, Pakistan, Libya, Yemen, and Syria to that list. He bombed all of them, all smaller countries. So much for that Nobel Peace Prize that I presume he wears around his neck while ordering drone strikes on civilians and water treatment plants and hospitals and wedding parties. And an hour later, when the first responders arrive. It's also pretty ridiculous to accuse Putin of jailing political opponents when Obama put more whistleblowers in prison during his term in office than all the previous United States presidents combined. Your hypocrisy knows no bounds. Obama. And I get it. He's a puppet. You know, these presidents, they don't have as much power as we are led to believe. But he's the face of America, for better or for worse. And, you know, he's really good at speech. You know, he's great on the teleprompter. Not so good when the teleprompter went down, but great on the teleprompter for the time he was president. That's undeniable. But this is called projection. And it's when a person takes all their faults and issues that they have and they pretend that the person that they're fighting with has them instead. Like if they're cheating on their wife and drinking way too much, they confront their wife and accuse her of cheating on them and drinking too much. You know what I mean? This sort of tactic is infuriating to most people. But in political campaigns, one sees this strategy constantly. In part because it's a favorite trick of sociopaths. If you're wondering what to get former President Obama for his next birthday, how about a mirror? So he can take a look at the ridiculousness of his actions. But you see, that's just a joke to say, get the guy a mirror. Because you could put him in front of a mirror and he wouldn't see it. Because psychopaths don't see that stuff. They're not constrained by these feelings of guilt and remorse and self-reflection like we are. They would look at that mirror and they would see, you know, what they want to see. They wouldn't see the drone strikes. They wouldn't see the, you know, what Obama did to the healthcare industry, that giveaway to them through Obamacare. They wouldn't see that he kicked 5 million people out of their homes during the Wall Street crash where they were screwing with mortgages and mortgage-backed securities and collateralized debt obligations and imploded the economy and caused millions of people to lose their homes. Obama threw them out. He gave them the money to the banks and said, fuck you to the people. That's what he did. That's a fact. That's undeniable. But America is still exceptional at some things. But most of them are not exactly the types of things one would want to put on their resume. As an example, Americans consume more prescription drugs than any other country, and it isn't even close. We love pills. We want a pill for everything. We want a pill to make us lose weight. We want steroids to help us gain muscles. We want something to make us quit smoking. We want another pill to make us happy because we're depressed. And then we've got to have another pill because our dick doesn't work. And so we need that pill. But then we've got too high blood pressure. So then we need a pill for that. I mean, it just never ends. It's sort of endemic of the culture of America. It's like we just want a pill. We just want to get to the finish line immediately and not put in the work. And it shows in our prescription drug use. And it also is, you know, interesting that we're one of two nations that allows prescription drugs to be advertised on TV, which every other country, anybody that comes to the United States, like one of the first things they say, what's different about the United States? What are the sorts of things that you notice right off the bat that's different from your home country as opposed to the United States? One of the top things that people list is, I cannot believe that you advertise drugs, these prescription medicines on TV. It seems crazy. Now to us, it's just normalized, not even understanding that only the United States and New Zealand are the only countries that do that. But to other people that come to the United States and check that out, that what's one of the things that jumps right out at them is just this unbelievable pimping of prescription medicine to people. It's a cure for everything. You know, I'm not trying to say that medicine is bad. I'm just saying that, you know, our dependence on prescription drugs and the insanity of Big Pharma, the details of which are, you know, that it was an industry that was founded by the Rockefellers in order to create petroleum-based medicines, which is a strange way of thinking about medicines because you don't necessarily think of it as being petroleum-based, but they are, and that's what they're described as. So we've got that. And then is it any surprise that the number three leading cause of death is medical error and, you know, and medicine? So we're number one, most prescription drugs. Well, what else are we good at? Well, America's home to the fattest people in the world. And if you don't believe me, which I'm sure you already do, just go to Walmart and it will become obvious. Or turn on TLC and watch My 600-Pound Life and feel good about yourself. Yay. We're so free. We're free to be fat. And I'm not talking about people that have gland problems. Nobody's buying that bullshit excuse anyway. Stop eating. Even though the United States has only 5% of the world's population, has 25% of the prisoners. If that doesn't summarize the problems of the United States, I really don't know what does. American exceptionalism. We're so exceptional that we have figured out a way to stick more people in our prisons than any other country. And the United States is relatively safe. You know, obviously there's some parts you don't want to, you know, you don't want to be in after dark, but it's not safe because all the bad people are locked up, because there's plenty of bad people out there. Many of them working in Washington, D.C., I would suggest. And there's a lot of good people locked up in prison, you know, a lot of decent people on bullshit charges, on three strikes charges. On drug charges, mostly. There are 65 million Americans with criminal records, making hunting for those elusive jobs even more difficult. Since it's required to, the person's required to disclose on their application if they've been convicted of a felony or risk being prosecuted for lying on the application. So we've got problems here. You know, America, for all its preaching about family values and its looking down on shithole countries, has technically the most crime of any country in the world. But that's a little misleading because it's not the most dangerous place in the world. It just has the most crime. So why is that? Well, it has the most crime because it has the most laws. So, you know, you're guilty of a crime whenever somebody in a position of authority wants you to be guilty of the crime. They can dig up something. It's not very hard. There's hundreds of thousands of laws in the United States. It's impossible to know when you're violating one of them. One of them is like you're not allowed to walk your donkey down the main street on a Thursday or something like that. You know, it's crazy shit like that. But if they want to dig into their book of laws and find something that you've done wrong, it doesn't take very long. It's easy to do. So we've got the most crime. But I've been to more dangerous places than the United States. The crime in the United States is not limited to just the ordinary citizens, because America has more people killed by the police than Venezuela, Somalia, or South Africa. Three dangerous countries. The role of the United States police and the way they see the public is alarming. That thin blue line, you can take that thin blue line and stick it up your ass. How about this? How about instead of defending each other in your police force and looking out for the bad guys in, you know, that wear a uniform like the rest of those cops. How about instead of sticking up for them, you stick up for the people like you were supposed to, like you're paid to, like you took an oath to? instead of letting your psychopathic partner beat the shit out of some 15-year-old kid and drop a gun next to him and then say, oh, he had a gun. Instead of doing that, why aren't you policing yourself? I have no respect for the police force in the United States. I'm sorry. I know there's good cops out there. I know people will take that and be like, that's a shitty statement. I get it. Not everybody that wears a police uniform is a bad guy. But, you know, there's a lot of people in your police force that are giving you a bad name. So if you're one of those people that's a good cop, well, then it's up to you to check those bad cops. Because you can go on any social media platform and in about 2 minutes find countless videos of police absolutely beating the shit out of unarmed people in the United States, punching women on the side of the road, shooting black kids in the back. After pulling up on the scene within 2 seconds, you watch that Tamir Rice video. That cop is pulls up his car, gets out, 1-1000, 2-1000, boom. Shoots the kid in the back as he's running away. American exceptionalism. The thin blue line. Get the fuck out of here with that thin blue line stuff. You guys are going to have you people in the police force are going to have a very hard time defending your actions, especially with this coronavirus situation that we've seen. Arresting mothers for letting their kids play at the park. Giving $1,000 tickets to a bunch of kids that are sitting in front of a 7-Eleven. You're going to have no friends. You're going to take those uniforms off and be shunned by the public, and rightfully so. So for you good cops out there, you might want to step up in your office, in your precinct, and start holding those other guys accountable because they're tarnishing your reputation. This American exceptionalism, this police exceptionalism is a myth. There's nothing exceptional about that. And you know, people think twice now about calling the police when somebody's breaking into their house because there have been too many stories of the police showing up and shooting the homeowner or throwing flashbang grenades into the baby's room under the crib, blinding the kid, and then taking the dad down to the police station and arresting him. It's a problem, and it's not a small one either. Americans watch the most television of any society, any country in the world, around 28 hours per week, which really isn't helping that fat problem that I mentioned earlier. And part of what comes with television, it comes with propaganda. You've got to know that. You've got to recognize that the CIA infiltrated the mainstream media 6 decades ago. If you're just figuring this out, what's taking you so long? They don't call it television programming for nothing. They're programming you. We've got a weight problem. And we've got a television problem. And through the coronavirus, you know, quarantine, then you get more of that, right? And then you're forcing people to stay at home where they're watching television and eating. Open the doors, let everybody out. Everybody's 100 pounds heavier than they were when they went in. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing that we are so addicted to our television. It would be one thing if it was just about get outside and get some exercise. But the problem is that you're also not getting outside and getting the exercise, but what you're getting is you're getting propagandized by your television overtly and covertly. So the overt propaganda is stuff like watching the news, where through the declassification of Operation Mockingbird, the CIA has basically shown that they infiltrated these news networks and they are fact-checking and script-writing for the networks. That is what is happening. That is happening. It's been happening a long time. It's undeniable. They don't deny it anymore. It's part of it. They admitted it during the church committee hearings in 1975. So, you know, so this has been going on for 45 years. So, you know, that they've admitted to it. So we're definitely propagandized. And then you take into effect the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act of 2012, which legalized propaganda inside the United States to be used on Americans without labeling it as propaganda. And you've got the legalization of lies. You've got the mainstream media controlled by the CIA. And you've got the news media working in conjunction with the CIA, but also for their corporate overlords, which own the networks and all their other companies in a variety of industries. So you aren't getting anywhere near the truth. That's the overt censorship and that's the overt programming. But the covert programming is all of these psychological things like subliminal messages in programs, in hidden text. If you want to find something really fascinating, you have to go dig it around on a video platform like ThemTube or whatever. But you can find something that was from, if you remember, and a lot of people aren't going to be old enough to remember this, but there was a time, you know, in the 60s and 70s when, you know, television went to about midnight and then it just went to fuzz. You know, it just went to like snow. They called it like the static. But right before it would go to fuzz, some of them would play like the Star Spangled Banner, like a video of it. And it would be, you know, flags flapping in the breeze and bald eagles flying over mountains. And it was just, you know, like a pretty show for about 3 minutes. And if you find this video, there's one of them that shows like the subliminal messages that are being run across the bottom of in the text as the words for the, I think it's America the Beautiful, was the song that's playing. And it's running the text of the verse on the bottom. But as that one line is turning to the next line, they're doing something funky with the way the letters turn, you know, switch. And you get another set of letters and it says things like obey your government, don't steal, support your politicians. I mean, it's, and you're like, what in the holy fuck are you talking about? When you see this video, it will blow your mind. So that exists. That's a real thing. Subliminal messages through television is a very, very real thing. So, you know, we've got problems with that too. That is, you know, we'll lump that into with the Americans watch the most television. So it's more than it just being like empty calories for your brain. It's actually more negative than that. Not to mention, then you take into the component that it throws your brain into a different brainwave cycle and all the science behind it. It's there, you know. Look into it, right? Eddie Bravo. Look into it. Now, another component of this American exceptionalism that we've come to question is the fact that everybody knows that the United States has the most governmental debt of any country. You know, $23+ trillion and counting. But the people have the most personal debt as well. I don't know why that's surprising to anybody. You know, if you've got a parent who's bad with money, the kid's going to grow up to be bad with money. If you've got a parent that's bad with food and eats, you know, unhealthy food and doesn't exercise, you're going to have kids that are like that too. Monkey see, monkey do, right? So when you've got the United States running debts of $23 trillion, is it really hard to fathom that the American people would also have the most personal debt of any nation? Of course not. American students have the highest student loan debt of any country. Student loan debt alone, roughly $1.5 trillion. $1,500 billion. Of student loan debt. And thanks to lobbying by the student loan lenders to Congress, that debt cannot be forgiven through bankruptcy. And private student loan debt even passes to family members after death. So if you go to college and you rack up $45,000 worth of debt, and you go to Cancun on spring break and have 70 Jägermeister shots and drop dead, your parents are on the hook for your student loan debt. Pretty nice, huh? What a scam. What a scam that these cocksuckers that created this debt put this in place and bought up these for sale congressmen to do their work for them, to rig the game in a way that you cannot discharge this debt through bankruptcy. You can discharge every other kind of debt, not this kind. Why is that? Why is it so important? Well, because they think that without the money they loaned you, you owe them for the rest of your life for that education that they allowed you to get through borrowing this money. And therefore, because you're going to be educated from college and you're going to carry that education and that college degree with you out into the future, well, then they think it's not fair that you should be able to discharge that debt because they've set you up for life. That's how they think. And you owe them and you don't get out of that arrangement. Pretty awesome, huh? Did you know that America is only ranked 18th according to the World Happiness Report? What happened to American exceptionalism? I thought everybody wanted to be like us. I thought we were the greatest nation to ever live. We're 18th in the World Happiness Report. What happened? Not enough Happy Meals? Something happened, that's for sure. The United States spends more money on defense than China, Russia, India, Saudi Arabia, France, the United Kingdom, and Japan combined. Yay, we're number one. I thought China and Russia are our biggest threats. If we spend more money on our defense than China, Russia, India, Saudi Arabia, France, UK, and Japan combined, then why are we so paranoid that these countries are going to come and get us? Shouldn't we just have the ability to mop the floor with them? If we're spending $1 trillion a year, every year, for the past, you know, 2 decades plus, why would we ever have to worry about these countries? We should be able to have the upper hand with all the money that we've invested in that. Well, and maybe the answer is that we do have the upper hand and we could mop the floor with all that. I don't actually believe that, but let's just say that we could. The military industrial complex needs boogeymen. They need them. They have to have bad guys out there. That's why they created ISIS and ISIL and Daesh and you know, Al-Qaeda and all of these boogeymen front companies that are funded by the CIA to be the bad guys that we need to scour the globe looking for. They do that because they want to justify their inflated and bloated budgets. They do that because if there's always a threat, then there's always a reason to pour $1 trillion into defense contracts, which aren't defensive at all. They're offensive. But, and, you know, I think it's telling that after World War II, that they changed the names. It used to be the Department of War, and they changed it now to the Department of Defense. And it's ironic that when it was the Department of War, the United States wasn't involved in all that many wars. But when it changed to the Department of Defense, then they started to get involved in all sorts of wars. So it's just a bit of inversion on the name, of course. But That's what we're known for. We're known for this great military. We've spent all this money on this military. Well, if we've got such a great military, can I ask a real simple question? Why'd we lose Vietnam? I know. It was a tie. No, we lost Vietnam. We left with our tail between our legs. Because the fucking government of the United States told the troops in Vietnam, they put them under weird restrictions. They couldn't shoot at anybody unless they were being shot at first. They tied one hand behind their back and made them fight a war, which of course we lost. We've got this great army. Well, why haven't we mopped up Afghanistan? Why are they still fighting back? What happened with Iraq? What happened to the Rumsfeld said it was going to cost us $50 billion. How about $4 trillion? When you factor in future expenditures for paying for all these poor guys that come back with post-traumatic stress and nightmares and ones that have legs blown off or God forbid, shoot themselves when they get back at an alarming rate. That's the cost of war. Nowhere near what Rumsfeld said. This great military of ours, why haven't we been able to, you know, take down all these smaller countries? I don't know. Maybe because we're not trying to win. We're just trying to, the war is not meant to be won. It's meant to be continuous. It's an embarrassment. America spends more money on airport security, over $110 billion on the TSA, the Transportation Security Administration, even though they have a 95% failure rate and have literally never caught a terrorist. Do you know that with the TSA, when they do hiring for job positions, they give the guys a test? But much like golf, lowest score wins. And the reason why they give the TSA people a test is they want to see how high they'll score on it. And if you score high on the test, they don't hire you. And the reason for this is because they don't want really smart people working at the TSA, because they'll go through training, which costs money, and they'll put them out onto the floor at some airport, and it'll take about 30 days. And those people say, you know, I'm out of here. This is the worst job I've ever had, and I'd rather be doing anything else other than this. So they don't hire smart people at the TSA. They give you a test, but they don't tell them what they're looking for in this test. They're looking for low scores. They're looking for people that don't have any options, because that way they'll take the job and they'll stick with it because they're lucky to have that job. And if you work for the TSA and you're listening to this, look, man, I'm sorry, or lady, I'm sorry to tell you that, but that's how it is. That's what they've done. This is not a great job. Only 35% of Americans, which is, you know, roughly 100 million people, even have a valid passport. And on a yearly basis, 96.5% of the population never leave the country. That's kind of a big deal. It's hard to have a robust worldview when you've never seen the world, when you've never left. And 2/3 of Americans don't even have a valid passport. You know, that's why they believe the things that they're told on their nightly news about shithole countries, because they've never been there. They've never gone to sea. They've never gone to Mexico. Oh, Mexico's dangerous. There's drug cartels everywhere. They'll blow your brains out. I've been to Mexico 75 times. I've never had a problem. They're nice people. Are there drug cartels there? Yeah, absolutely. Are you bothering them? I'm not. You know, I think Matt Damon said it, you know, that one of the problems that we have in this country is people have too thin of passports, you know, and I get it. It's easy to say, get a thick passport when you're a famous actor with millions of dollars, but he's right. A lot of the problems that Americans have, the perception that Americans have towards the world, the rest of the world, is shaped through the media and fear and programming. And it's an inaccurate version of places. You know, oh, they're so poor. That country's so poor, therefore it must be dangerous. Look, there's parts of, I've been to Thailand, parts of Thailand that are very poor. They're the nicest people in the world. And I'm not even exaggerating. They are the nicest, warmest, friendliest people I have ever met. And some of them live in abject poverty. Is that a shithole country? I mean, I guess depends on how you define it. Are they economically repressed in some areas? Yeah, they are. But the people are phenomenal. The nicest people you could ever meet. What about us? What about the United States? Look at this rich country. Company too, I guess, if you want to get technical about it. And some of the worst people you'll ever meet. Some Americans. A nation filled with Karens ratting out their neighbors for going outside and being in the park. But we have to worry about the other countries? Shithole countries? Hate to break it to you, we've become a shithole country. Sorry, we have. I don't enjoy it, you know? But if we're going to be honest about this, look at what we've devolved into. It's not pretty. A survey conducted by the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg Public Policy Center showed that 37% of people could not name any of the five rights protected by First Amendment. And only 48% could name freedom of speech. So we suck at knowing what our rights are too. That's not very exceptional. And in this same survey, 18% of the people that they interviewed, roughly one in five, said that Muslims do not have the same rights as other U.S. citizens. And 15% of the people, which is about one in six, said that atheists don't have the same rights as other U.S. citizens. We're not being very exceptional. We don't understand how things work. We're kind of dumb, sort of racist, definitely xenophobic. It's an embarrassment. 4 out of 10 Americans didn't know who the vice presidential candidates were in the lead up to the 2016 debates. 4 out of 10. And a third of people interviewed were unable to even name one of the three branches of the U.S. government: legislative, executive, and judicial. 1 out of 3 drew a blank. If you've ever watched any Mark Dice videos, you're probably surprised that number isn't closer to 6 out of 7 people not being able to know any of the branches of government. We're a nation of dummies. It's kind of funny. I mean, it's pretty sad and embarrassing too. But look, the sad truth is that America has been living on its reputation for a very long time. And the government has been using the corporate media to hide as many of their transgressions as possible over the decades. We've been dumbed down through GMO foods, our education system, Common Core, that's the next batch of dumbing down. We've been dumbed down through Big Pharma, through fluoride. that we drink. Everyone, hey, you got to have fluoride for your teeth. It's a neurotoxin. Did you know? It'll lower your IQ by a couple of points. Yeah, but my teeth. The Nazis put fluoride in the water to make the people in all their work camps more docile. It's a neurotoxin. You can look it up. To quote the great Bill Hicks, I can't be this big of an asshole if I don't have the truth on my side. It's kind of a, we've been dumbed down by lead paint. If you think that, oh, they wouldn't put fluoride, not poisonous. I mean, we would never allow it if it was poisonous. I mean, that's crazy. We allowed lead paint till 1979. You know? The United States Empire always held itself out as some shining beacon of freedom, democracy, and fairness. But it is none of those things. The man behind the curtain has been exposed for being the lying, cheating, murderous, thieving, backstabbing villain that he has always really been. And as the great George Carlin said, they call it the American dream because you have to be asleep to believe it. If you like this show, share it with your friends, family, get the word out. And if you want to connect with the show and send me questions or comments, you can do so at the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. Thanks, everybody. Take care.